I'm late. I had to stop by the Wax Museum again and give the finger to FDR.
We know Al-Qaeda, Zawahiri, is supporting the opposition in Syria. Are we supporting Al-Qaeda in Syria?
Well, it's a proud day for America. And by God, we've kicked Vietnam Syndrome once and for all. Thank you very, very much.
I say it again, you've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked.
These witnesses are trying to simply deny things that just about everybody else accepts as fact.
He came, he saw, he died.
Well, we ain't killing their army, but we killing them. We be on CNN like, say our name, bitch, say it three times.
The meeting of the largest armies in the history of the world. Then there's going to be an invasion.
All right, you guys, introducing Sheldon Richman. He's the executive editor at the Libertarian Institute. Welcome back to the show, Sheldon. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine and great to be back with you. Hope you're doing fine.
I'm doing good. Appreciate you joining me this morning. Big day today. We got some business to talk before we get to other things. Right. First of all, our institute, the Libertarian Institute, that's you and me, libertarianinstitute.org, we've just published Will Grigg's book. It was You, Me, and Will. But then he died after about half a year of that, unfortunately, 2 years ago. But we finally got it together with an incredible foreword by Tom Edlam and an incredible, and already all the compliments are rolling in about the cover art done by Will Grigg's friend Scott Albert, who did such an incredible job on this cartoon of Will for the front cover. And it's all set up. The Kindle's out. The paperback is out. It's no quarter. The ravings of William Norman Grigg. And it's so good. It's so good, man. I'm telling you, you know, I had to read it three or four times for the edit and all that. And it's just devastating, too. I mean, it's just, and the consistency of the quality of his writing. And of course, his nose for caring about all the same stuff as us and everything is just, and it's just great on war, on peace, and especially on the cops, man, and so many things. I just know everybody's going to really love it. And I think anyone could guess this, but also it's true that all the money goes directly to Will Grigg's family. It doesn't even stop at Go or anything like that. It's all connected directly to them. And so all of the proceeds from the book. And this is the kind of book that should sell for generations. I mean, it's a timeless. I mean, it's timely, but it's timeless, too. You know what I mean? Kind of a thing.
Yeah, well, this is really great news. I, thanks to you, saw what it looks like on Amazon. So the cover is unbelievably great.
Yeah,
very fun, great caricature. Everybody go at least take a look at it and then buy the book. I've read a lot of Will over the years. I haven't looked at this exact collection yet, so I'll be doing that. And also my thanks to you for making this happen. That's just super great tribute to him, but also just a great service to all the readers out there, potential readers, because they need to, if they don't already know Will through his writing, they need to meet him and enjoy, you know, what he did, because he was unique and irreplaceable. But at least we have this collection. We have all the writings he left behind.
I'll tell you what, this is one of those, and this happens every time, but whenever a friend of mine dies, but this case especially. It just, it really bothers me, the whole incongruity thing between the value of a human life and how easy it is to lose one. You know, just it's so stupid. Some stupid heart attack that happens for just the space of 5 minutes is enough to cancel out the existence of a man as great as this. It just pisses me off. Anyway, I do miss him.
We miss him.
Yeah, and people will when they read this, too. It's just, it's not fair that he died at 52. It just totally sucks. But anyway, while he was alive, man, he was kicking ass. And, you know, I was a fan of Will for a long time. I mean, I read him in the New American Magazine starting, I think, in like 95 or 96, right at the end of high school years. So I was a huge fan of his for a very long time. And then we finally became friends by like 2003 or 4, That's when I started interviewing him and talking with him. And yeah, he's a great guy. Oh, I want to say about the book too. And I'm sorry because this should have got a note in the book. I don't know. He probably doesn't care. But I want to give credit to Grant Smith for helping to format the paperback version of this thing. Mike Dworsky also, who did such a great job of putting together the EPUB and the .mobi, that's the Kindle version of it. All the credit to him. And it was Will himself who edited the book, and it was Will and Tom Edlam who, you know, originally formatted it and got all the everything. I mean, all I did here really was finally get off my butt and put the thing finally together, but it was everybody else's work. I didn't really do anything. I had a little publisher's note at the end just to say I missed the guy, kind of a thing. But other than that, all the credit goes to, of course, Will, Tom Edlam, Scott Alberts, Mike Dworsky, and Grant Smith for putting the thing
together.
Well,
let me add my appreciation to that group you just named.
Yeah, great guys.
They've done yeoman service, and lots of people will be benefiting by having this book so, you know, easily available and for years to come. So my thanks to everybody who had any hand in it.
Yeah, man. So get out there, everybody. You'll see the banner ads up. We're getting them together. So they'll be at the Institute and at scotthorton.org, and hopefully, I'm sure, at antiwar.com. And also, you know what? Call goes out right now to all libertarian podcasters. Please interview me and or especially Tom Edlam, who was really Will's protege at the New American Magazine there for many years, and who wrote the introduction that Tom wrote is just a perfect biography of Will. It's you couldn't ask for better than what Tom did there, and I'm interviewing him later today about it too. But please, I beseech all libertarian media people, write about this thing, interview Tom Edlam especially about this book, and help promote it. It's, you know, never even mind the fact that he left behind six kids and a sick wife, unfortunately. Yeah. But, I mean, even without that, the thing is worth its weight in platinum. Forget it. It's stellar. It's the best stuff the libertarian movement produced so far in the 21st century, or equal to it. You know, it's like Ron Paul's first run in 08 on paper, that level of quality of greatness. Anyway. Hey, here's another thing. Speaking of Ron, I'm interviewing him today again, and that'll be interview 38 of Ron. I'll have to get that transcribed and added to the book I'm about to put out here in just another couple of weeks, I hope.
Yeah.
If I say really a couple cool. of weeks, that probably means more like five or something, but I'm really trying to buckle down now that Will's is out, and I'm putting out a book, The Great Ron Paul. The Scott Horton Show interviews 2004 through 2019. And it's just great. And when I go through editing it, I'm so proud of it and of him and of, I guess, myself, you know, pat on the back for just letting this man come on my show and say things 37 times over these years, because he's just so brilliant and so perfectly morally, libertarianly consistent on everything and just expert on every subject. And it's just, it's not like reading the same interview over and over and over again, other than my praise for the guy, I guess, which is a little embarrassing, but I don't care. But it's just awesome. And that's coming out real soon. And part of that is because the IRS is trying to kill me, because of course I've worked for antiwar.com for, you know, the last 15 years making $1,000 a month. So somebody's got to pay. This is my version of the Willie Nelson IRS tapes here, this Ron Paul book. I hope I'm not even going to get the money. I'm just going to use it to pay off the federal pigs so they don't, you know, continue extorting me and coming to my dad's house banging on the door.
There's some irony there.
Yeah, well, I figure, you know what? Here's the guy who introduced the constitutional amendment to repeal the 16th every year. The Liberty Amendment, and to get rid of the central bank. I figure I'll go ahead and use that for my IRS tapes and exploit that irony a little bit and try to put that behind me. And then I'm putting out a book. I know I'm just talking all over your interview today, but then I'm putting out a book of your essays about Palestine, like all of them, going back for 30 years or something like that, 1980s, 90s. and especially your recent series that you did last year for the Libertarian Institute, Why Palestine Matters. And it's such great stuff. I just put it down for a minute when I was trying to rip those PDF files of just the last few there. I'm going to have to get back to it. But it's already almost ready already, so that ought to be able to come out pretty soon. And then, of course, I'm getting back to work on my book about the Terror War. It's hard running an institute and doing all these things at the same time, but...
Yeah, plus you're doing interviews every day. But no, think of the stream of stuff that's coming. I'm saying this to the listeners now, not you. Just think about the stream of material beginning now with Will's collection that is on the way, not in the far distant future. So this is going to be very exciting stuff coming out from the Libertarian Institute. And you're the man. You're kind of the mover and the shaker here. You're making it happen.
Well, you know, we're really suffering for the lack of Will Grigg here. I mean, the three of us together as a team was really the perfect kind of a thing there. And, you know, compared to all the other libertarian institutes out there, I don't know how much of an institute we are, but we do have some great podcasters and some great regular writers. And then now, you know, with this book series putting out here, starting with Fool's Errand and the rest, that gives us a little bit of something to claim.
Street cred.
Yeah, man. And so speaking of interviews, too, like this one, and you just mentioned interviews all day. Well, all day today, I'm doing 11 interviews, including this one. And the last one will be Gareth Porter, number 5,000.
That's unbelievable. And that's an occasion for breaking out the champagne, I think.
Yeah, I need to start 5, drinking. Maybe I'll get some.
And think of that, 4,000 are with Gareth Porter, so that means 1,000 for the rest of us.
Yeah, there you go.
Just kidding.
Gareth has actually, you know what?
You probably know the number. How many is Gareth?
It is. I checked. It's because he's last today. It's right now. It's at 316 Gareth Porter interviews. So today will be 317.
It's not quite 10%.
Not quite, but that's pretty good.
That's pretty darn good.
And all that represents is that I've interviewed him about everything he's written since January 2007, because why wouldn't I?
And he's such a article-producing machine, unbelievable, that he's giving you, you know, every week he gives you many occasions to interview him. So actually it's not that surprising when you think about it. I'm delighted that he is eager to be on your show and so therefore has done so many.
Yeah,
because he's a busy guy, but he also realizes talking about those articles with you just is a magnifier, a megaphone for the articles. So good for him, good for you.
Yeah, you know, I think it was Tatiana Meraz asked me, so what's the big deal with Gareth then? Why is he so special? Or something. I said, well, you know what? If I was Mr. White, then he's Clark Kent. Like, he's just the best, man. He was, you know, if I had the money and I could run my own Daily Planet, he's my star reporter, man. Simple as that. Gareth, go prove that what they said about Iran today isn't true. And then out he goes. And then just a little while later, he shows why you should not believe what they're claiming today. So
he's in a class by himself. That book he did on Iran, A Manufactured Crisis, is people need to read that. It's as timely today as it was the day it came out. And, of course, you're right. He's keeping up with every one of these phony stories about Iran, given that war with Iran is certainly possible. I'm not sure I'm ready to say likely, but, you know, you can't tell day to day. And we need Gareth in there debunking all these claims that, you know, for decades they've said Iran is, you know, the biggest state sponsor of terrorism. And then... you know, but they never name anything. Once in a while, they do name something, but you can count, you can look it up to see what Gareth has had to say about it. And, you know, usually he will show you that he's addressed probably all the charges, but he'll show you that there's nothing to the claims, that there's either false flag or something phony going on. But the demonization of Iran since 1979, it has been, you know, intolerable. And thank goodness for Gareth.
Oh, yeah. Well, what about that time they attacked the USS Liberty? Oh, wait, that was Israel. Sorry.
Well, it's funny. I guess I'd never heard anybody claim that it actually was Iran. Somewhere somebody is claiming that. I just never heard it. Yeah. So you can't even
just
make fun of
me now joking. You know what is pretty close, though, was when Ledeen had influenced Michael Flynn to the degree when he was the head of the DIA that he was saying, you know, trying to get the DIA to prove somehow that Iran had done Benghazi. I was like, no, man, those are your Al-Qaeda guys. Goofball.
Well, in that book, Flynn and didn't Flynn and Ledeen do a book together where they had their own axis of evil, which included Al-Qaeda, Iran,
Maduro,
and, Libya,
and Kim, and everybody.
So they couldn't even keep the line straight, making Iran an ally of bin Laden.
Hang on just one second. Hey, man, here's a book you guys got to read. It's called No Dev, No Ops, No IT by Hussein Badakhshani. No Dev, No Ops, No IT. It's a book about how a libertarian ought to run his tech company. I think you'll really get a kick out of it. No dev, no ops, no IT. All right, so listen, man, let me ask you a thing here. We got about 10 minutes to talk about this, so I was kind of thinking I would ask you all about libertarianism, but on the other hand, we don't really have that much time. But let's talk about one extremely important aspect of libertarianism, anti-imperialism. And I don't know if you saw this, but the Libertarian Party chair put out this video by, I guess, the treasurer of the Hawaii Libertarian Party chapter, something like that. Anyway, you know, coming out full-throated for regime change to put Guaido in power in Venezuela because libertarianism means opposition to socialism. And so all us libertarians stand by this coup, he announced. And it was the chair of the party that put that thing out and said, hey, everybody, check out this great thing. And so, you know, I was wondering if maybe you could explain a little bit about, like, maybe if there's anything more important than opposing socialism in other people's countries to the libertarian ideology or movement or future.
Well, I was unaware of the story you just related. I don't see that. I get press releases from the Libertarian Party. And maybe it was in that, but I don't pay close enough attention to them. I usually don't open them, so maybe that's my fault. But, I don't know the kind of case this person in Hawaii made, but the idea that you can go from, quote, opposition to socialism to favoring U.S. efforts to change the regime in Venezuela, you know, there's like several hundred thousand light years between those two statements. You can oppose socialism all you want, but it nowhere follows that therefore the U.S. military or, you know, even diplomats, to think of Ukraine for a moment, should be engaged in regime change. I mean, one doesn't follow from the other because a whole lot of other things come into play if you favor regime change, like the U.S. government having a military that's prepared to engage in regime change, and all the things that go along with that, which is, you know, take us way more than 10 minutes to discuss all the implications of an imperial state or a national security state, whatever name we want to attach to it. So go ahead, oppose state socialism all you want, but what's that got to do with the U.S. government being involved in regime change? You can't have... you know, I don't want any government, but you can't even have a very small, limited government if you're going to be in, pursuing imperial policies all over the world. Even if you think you're a good faith world policeman, which doesn't happen anyway, we know it's not good faith policing that goes on. It's political stuff, geopolitical ambitions, and military industrial complex interests that end up controlling. But even if you imagine for the moment some utopia where there's good faith world policing, you can't have a small government and low taxes without that. I mean, with that policy, with world policing, because the world's in a way a disorderly place in a lot of ways, and if you're going to give that mission to the government, it's going to be pretty busy, which means it's going to be consuming resources, distorting the economy. And again, this just assumes unrealistically good faith. Add to the fact that you're not going to get good faith. You're going to get operators who are self-serving and are interested in mission creep and interested in justifying everything as a threat to us, even when there's not even the remotest threat. And that's a recipe for a humongous government that's gobbling up tons of resources, diverting labor and entrepreneurial ingenuity away from serving consumers and into serving, the government's missions. And how does that in any way line up with libertarian sensibilities? It doesn't at all.
And, I get it that libertarians, a lot of times, they come from the right. And I hate this because this caricature is, I think, not really representative of the libertarian movement overall at all. I think it's a mischaracterization, but there is a certain truth to it that libertarians essentially are Republicans who are for bro jobs and pot smoking. And so that makes them different than Republicans a little bit. But essentially, they are still relying on all of the same garbage that they were taught in government school when they were a kid about the benevolence of the government's intentions and the transitive property of democracy, where you believe something and then the government makes it happen for you, and just all this garbage, the way that people are raised, especially conservatives in this country. And then so they just, I guess they're just kind of helpless, right? They're lost in the dark. They can't even sit here and say to themselves, well, geez, I was just reading in the paper this morning that America bombed a bunch of their own puppet Afghan soldiers and cops twice in a week. Like 30 of them. Oops, dropped the JDAM on the wrong group of cops. And this is a war that's been going on for a generation now. Oh, you know what we should do? We should go to Venezuela and help the people there. All this, after Iraq, after the Islamic State and Libya and Yemen and Afghanistan, now you're going to go help the people of what? Honduras again, too? You're going to help another coup in Honduras? I mean, and never even mind the history of all of American oppression in Latin America. They've actually been on the back burner this century so far, as USA's been busy killing Arabs. But how the Libertarian Party could sit here and act like history just began yesterday, and there's this poor Stalinist country a couple miles of here that could really use a helping hand, without taking into account the context of any other thing: American corporate power, oil interests, John Bolton, the CIA, any other thing, any of the consequences for the people of the Middle East or of Latin America this whole time. It's just absolutely incredible. You know what I mean? This guy gets everything he knows from CNN, the leader of the LP, or what?
No, it's appalling. And to gauge in a little bit of hyperbole, none of us should sleep until we demolish the impression that libertarians and conservatives are relatives or in the same family. We have to destroy that idea because that has been so damaging. That was a historical sort of accident because of the Soviet Union after the Cold War, after World War II, and that too many libertarians, there were heroic libertarians who fought this, but too many libertarians thought, oh no, the conservatives are our natural allies. And, they'll be, because they're for free markets, we're for free markets, they're for limited government, we're for limited government. Chris, I'm for limiting government, but I'm not for limited government. And then even some of them would say, well, look, even once the Soviet Union goes away, they'll be with us on foreign policy. Even the ones that were tuned into foreign policy correctly would sometimes make apologies for the conservatives and say, but once the Cold War is over, they'll be with us even on foreign policy. Well, none of that is true. We can see the Cold War has been over a good long time, and an awful lot of conservatives, there are honorable exceptions like the American conservative, but an awful lot of conservatives are as warmongering as they were when the Soviet Union existed. They're not with us on the free market, as we could see. I mean, you just need to go back to George W. Bush and when the recession hit, and he said we need to violate free market principles, what, to save the free market. And now with Trump, it's all over. With, you know, again, with a couple of, well, I was going to say a couple of honorable exceptions, but maybe those, the people I'm now thinking of are really libertarians and not conservatives at all. But, I mean, look at them. With Trump now, they embrace protectionism. They embrace, I mean, they've talked some peace, but somehow we haven't actually seen it in action yet. So they're not allies of ours. They're not family members. If there's a family, a libertarian family, if there's a conservative family reunion, don't send me an invitation because I'm not in your family. And if I put on a libertarian reunion, don't expect an invitation because, you know, I don't believe you're in my family. Historically, liberalism and libertarianism have been on the left and have been anti-empire, anti-military, with, you know, no thank you for your service. You know, I like to say thank you for your service to the empire. If I'm going to thank for service, that's how I'm going to complete the sentence. There's no family resemblance or relationship. So let's stop acting like it is. And I can't stand it. I hear it almost all the time of people say, you know, conservatives slash libertarians, as if they're, yeah, they're Republicans who, you know, who think marijuana should be legal. If you think that's the difference between those two camps, you got to go back and do some reading.
Yeah. Well, and there sure are a hell of a lot of differences between us and the left, too, which is, I think, as you say, that's the historical accident where, wow, the leftists in adopting Marxism became even more statist than the conservatives, who always were the party of the crown and the church and I mean the church with political power, not just religion in general, but I mean the old order of, you know, feudal power. That does make us seem like friends of the conservatives compared to, you know, people who want to nationalize everything, you know, and abolish prices and human nature. That's not going to work. But yeah, you're right. That shouldn't make us move right. That should just show conservatives why to stop being conservatives and to become libertarians, really. So,
right. But there's always been a libertarian element that identified with the left. Bastiat, when he was in France's national legislature in the early first half of the 19th century, sat on the left. That's where that term actually comes from. You had the opponents of the old regime on the left and the apologists for the old regime on the right. And Bastiat sat with Proudhon. They disagreed on a lot of things about whether if you abolish government, if the government stops intervening in the economy, will there be rent? Will there be interest? I mean, they debated economics, but they agreed that the government shouldn't be meddling with interfering with people's peaceful economic, not just economic activity. There are no strictly economic activities with people's activity, peaceful activities. And then if you go to the early American libertarians, I'm talking now late 19th century, 20th century, Benjamin Tucker, people around Liberty Magazine. They identified with the left. I mean, they were part of the Socialist International. Now they had big arguments with them, and Tucker sort of got fed up eventually. But they saw themselves as leftists. They were pro-worker. They were part of the workers' movement, trying to free it from government and bosses who were linked to government. And, you know, just they had all the same concerns that many libertarians have today. Mm-hmm. And it was not right wing. It was not pro-military.
Hey, what's a good article by you about that stuff?
Gosh, I don't know if I've actually done an article about Tucker and those people, but others have. I don't have anything off the top of my head. Look up people can Google Roderick Long and put in Benjamin Tucker and you'll find stuff. And I think David D'Amato has written about Benjamin Tucker at libertarianism.org, at one of the Cato Institute sites.
So overall, I mean, in that broader take, I always, of course, have my old standby. It's one of, if not my favorite, Rothbard essay from 1965, Left and Right, The Prospects for Liberty. And people know of Rothbard as a crotchety old right-winger by the 1990s, but in this case, he's saying that libertarianism is all the way to the left, to the left of the Reds, and what statists the right are from that angle. And it's a great one. There's so much, you know, these are all kind of metaphysical concepts and all that, but there's so much truth. And I've had so many people tell me that their mind has been blown by reading that article, that just help makes them have to recategorize all kinds of
and
things.
And they can Google for a Roderick Long article about, it was actually a speech he gave, about that Rothbard essay. So if you put in Roderick Long and Rothbard and prospects, the prospects for liberty or left and right prospects for liberty, that commentary by Roderick will come up, and that will be filled with interesting stuff on this topic.
Cool. All right. Well, I got to let you go because next up is Peter Ford on Al-Qaeda in Syria.
Okay. Well, have a great day and congratulations on 5,000 interviews. Fantastic, Scott.
Cool. Thanks very much, Sheldon.
Talk to you soon.
Appreciate it, man. All right, you guys. That's the great Sheldon Richman. And you know, for people not too familiar, don't think, let me tell you, he wrote the book on homeschool, on guns, and on abolishing the income tax. That's what kind of leftist libertarian he is. Get your head around that stuff. LibertarianInstitute.org. Oh, yeah, and his latest was why we should repeal the Constitution and go back to the Articles of Confederation.
well, that's even too statist, but...
Yeah, I know. I didn't mean to make you out like a collectivist there, but... On the way to anarcho-nothingness. All right, appreciate it, bud.
Bye-bye.
So, you like supporting anti-war radio hosts. That makes sense. Here's how you can do that. Go to scotthorton.org/donate, and there's all kinds of options to do so and all kinds of different kickbacks at different levels. Of course, take PayPal, Patreon, and all different kinds of digital currencies and all of those sorts of things. And anybody who signs up by way of Patreon or PayPal to donate $5 a month to the show will automatically get keys to the Reddit room, my own private Reddit group that I have. Quite a few members now and lots of fun in there every day. So check out all about that at scotthorton.org/donate. And thanks.